be happy.
Hello, my name is Gail Moskowitz, and you are listening to Mental Health Matters. I appreciate you tuning in today, and we have a great show today. We have a great guest, and I'll introduce her in just a minute. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I have been very, very lucky to practice in the Richmond community for 31 years. Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health. We try to talk about things in regard to interpersonal relations, addiction, sex, sexuality, and I like to talk about healthier ways for us to live more thoughtful and more emotionally honest and fulfilling lives. Psychological issues are complex and they often are misunderstood. We all have judgments about how other people live their lives, about other people's blind spots, and we all tend to get confused. We have all experienced sadness and depression. We have all experienced anxiety, panic. None of us escape without peer pressure. We've all experienced loss. The list goes on and on. Yet as a society and as individuals, we tend to want to judge other people for the things they're struggling with. We underfund mental health programs. We have morally confused notions of how to make our own pain go away. And yet, we are very, very rigid about what we think is correct behavior on other people's part. Each week on Mental Health Matters, I introduce and discuss a topic, either with a knowledgeable guest or from my own body of information and my own body of experience, and then I try to give you, the audience, an opportunity to ask questions or weigh in on the subject. Today, though, we have so much ground we want to cover that we're not going to take any phone calls. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, I began talking about issues in regard to eating disorders. The first 2 weeks ago, I defined what an eating disorder was, and we talked a little bit about anorexia and about bulimia. Last week, I talked about compulsive eating. And this week, we're going to again talk about anorexia, only this week, we're going to have a young woman with us who has struggled with anorexia and has really come out the other side. So I hope that you'll listen, and I hope you will enjoy the show. Remember, we're here every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM on your dial here in Richmond, Virginia. And if you'd like to listen to us on the computer, you can log on to our website, www.wrir.org. And while you're on there, click on my show. You can listen in real time, or you can get access into my website, which will show you where all of my shows are archived. You can subscribe to my podcast, doesn't cost you a dime, and you can catch all the shows you might have missed or you liked so much you wanted to listen to again. So let's get started. Again, this is Gail Moskowitz, and you're talking about, you're listening to Mental Health Matters. Today, we're going to talk about anorexia. I'd like to introduce my guest. Her name is Ari Washler. She is a graduate student in the VCU School of Social Work. And she, along with her aunt published a book called Biographies of Disease. And this one in particular is Biographies of Disease, Anorexia. And it was written by her aunt, whose name is Stacy Beller Stryer. And it is published by Greenwood Press. You can get all that information by going to my website, which you can get to by clicking onto my website when you get onto the radio's website, which is www.wrir.org, or you can send me a note to my email, which is U and R, Mental Health Matters, all one word, at gmail.com, and I'll be happy to send you a link to my website. Welcome to the show, Ari.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I'm really, really glad you're here, and the last two shows, we have talked about issues around eating. We've talked a little bit about issues in regard to how women view their bodies and about compulsive eating, binge eating, bulimia, and who is susceptible to this. So because I'd love to cover all this ground and want to just get right to it, how old were you when you began to, I don't know, get pulled into anorexia?
I was about 15 when I started to notice my body and eating. I had always gone through just doing what my mom said was healthy. And when I got to be 15 and started to really be a little more independent and hang out with girls my own age, and I heard them start talking about their bodies and what they were eating and boys looking at them, and that started it very slowly to recognize as I was coming into being a teenager and really understanding myself independently. But when it mainly hit was when I was 16 and I decided that I wanted to be very healthy for my own eating and body and mental health, everything. And that was when it really hit. And from when I was 16 to 17 is when I had anorexia. And then after that, I started to recover and to notice. But 16 is when it hit, when I really became independent, got my license, got off on my own. And it was really hard for my parents to realize because I had so much independence.
So I want to ask you something. Why do you think you, personally, Ari Washler, adorable, bright, had plenty of friends, why were you vulnerable to this?
Well, I've thought a lot about this. I talked so much about this with therapists and thought about it on my own, wrote in journals. And what I've come to, the conclusion that I've come to, is that it was kind of the perfect storm. I was at the right age where I was very vulnerable. I really cared what other people thought, and I hadn't gotten enough confidence in myself, enough experiences to have confidence. I had other things going on in my family, and those were just the very minute things. The biggest thing was my personality. I can almost look at people now and say they would be very susceptible to anorexia or to bulimia. I was a perfectionist. I was a people pleaser. I was a firstborn child, which isn't always perfect. It isn't, like, that's not the exact what'll happen if this you are all these things. But for me, they all added up into a person who was very, very emotional and cared, just wanted to please, and especially wanted to please my parents. And when my dad was pushing me in tennis and in sports, I wanted to be perfect there. And when my parents together were pushing me in academics, I wanted to be perfect there. And really, my parents wouldn't say anything, and I would assume that they were disappointed. And so I would work harder. And so really, it was my personality and the fact that I was more independent, so I was able to eat on my own without my parents watching everything I did, or go off on my own, drive off. And so it was just the perfect storm of, but the main thing was personality and the person that I was.
So what you're saying is that your personhood, the person who you are, that you are a perfectionist, or you were a perfectionist, mm-hmm. that you wanted other people to approve of you,
yes.
not just your parents, but other people. And that you started thinking you wanted to be healthy. That's what you said, not smaller or more beautiful, but mm-hmm. you said healthy. So how did healthy equate with being emaciated?
That was the huge thing why I was able to go for a year without anyone noticing, even myself, because I brainwashed primarily myself, but also the other people around me, that healthy was the key. I started out, my family went on a cruise, and I came back, and I didn't feel very good about myself, which I overate, which happens. And
everybody overeats on a
yeah.
cruise. Right.
But I came back, and I started to replace things like chips with pretzels. And so it really did start out as a healthy thing, and I started to play tennis once a day and really get out there. And then healthy turned into, oh, this could help my tennis, and I could become a great tennis player. And so when I became an athlete, people accepted a lot more excuses for everything that I was doing and pushed me also in different directions of becoming harder on myself. And so it was accepted, and
I remember you started running, too,
because mm-hmm.
I would see you running.
Yes, I ran about 5 miles a day, and I just started that all of a sudden, and every time that I would run, I would have to do one lap further, one lap around the neighborhood further. I was already doing 5 miles, but every day I had to add on, and I had to beat my time. And so slowly, little things, since it was just a lap, no one else noticed that it slowly became longer and faster. But I noticed, and that was the thing. But I was so brainwashed.
But you brainwashed yourself.
I brainwashed myself. My body and my mind were very disconnected, and it took a very long time for me to be able to put them back together. Because
did you literally stop eating?
I can go through my basic day. Day is, I even restricted what I drank because there was water weight there. I would run in the morning. I would get up. I would run in the morning immediately. I would go to school without eating anything. I was able to have half a bottle of water before lunch. And I was able to have one apple that I cut up into minuscule slices so that it was kind of like paper thin that I was eating. You couldn't even feel that you were eating the food because it was so thin. So I felt like I wasn't completely eating. I would go to lunch and I would eat one turkey sandwich, but it was pretty much just bread. I would put like half of a slice of very thinly cut turkey, and I ate one more apple. And then at dinner, I would see how much I could push around my plate without anybody noticing. So I would eat maybe half a piece of chicken and two bites of broccoli or salad or something. And that was my entire day. Yet I was running 5 miles in the morning, and I was playing tennis once a day for at least an hour. And I was still staying up till 1 in the morning doing schoolwork. And then I would get up again at 6 in the morning and restart that day all over again, only eating that much.
What were your thoughts about your body during this time?
It wasn't that I really thought it was my body. When I would look in the mirror, and I did look in the mirror, but that's where people misunderstand. I wasn't staring to say, oh, I look so beautiful, I look so good. It was, oh, I'm pushing myself really hard and I can see where it's paying off. And it wasn't my body looks good. It was, I don't see fat here or here or here. And it was almost like fat was a thing. Like it was a mass of itself and a body of itself.
Yes.
And so when I looked in the mirror, and my stomach actually went in very far at this point. And my mom saw it one day, and that's when things she really started to realize after a year, when she saw my body, it shocked her.
Because she didn't realize how thin you had
gotten. She didn't realize I wore really baggy clothes.
Yes.
So when people think that it's all about image, I was hiding my body from myself and but especially from others, because I knew that other people would. I didn't know, like, it was the subconscious thing that I wore very big clothes so that no one could see how tiny I was.
Just talk a little bit about what that mechanism is.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it yourself, is that you detach from your body. It's not that. People who suffer from anorexia really so detach from their body, it's that it's not about looking beautiful, it's about getting more and more and more detached from your entire physical sense of self.
Yes.
So it's not unusual for somebody with anorexia to cover up their body.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter how thin they are, actually, they don't feel content anyway.
I always could do better with everything. It wasn't just eating. It was schoolwork. It was just lots of different things in my life. I lived by the clock. I was so unemotional that I would watch I would know when 30 seconds would go by. I was able to tell in my mind exactly 30 seconds, and I had to have certain things done in that time frame of just a minute. When you would think a minute goes by so quickly, to me, it was an eternity. And I could see, I would memorize one note card in 30 seconds, and I would have to be flipping to the next, and I would have to know it. So everything was a very compulsive perfectionist, and I could always do better. That was the main thing. There was always room to improve. It didn't matter if I was getting 96s in my classes. There was always the 100 or the person who was doing 1 point better.
And you kept it to yourself. You were getting more and more isolated.
Yes, I didn't realize until after, but I was depressed. And
oh,
I was
yes.
pushing away from my friends. Because just being around anyone took so much work. I had so much energy putting into keeping my body alive and keeping everything that I was doing straight to be perfect that I didn't have time for other people in my head.
And again, and I just want to say this part of it is that's not unusual.
Yeah.
That's what happens is that people with anorexia begin to isolate themselves. They isolate themselves in shame, in confusion, in depression, and then it becomes a terrible cycle. I have a silly question, but I'm asking it for a reason. Yeah. So when you would look at other girls, what would you think about their bodies?
The funny thing is, I didn't really look at others. I was so caught up in myself and in what I was doing, and I was so afraid that someone was going to catch me in what I was doing, that I was so paranoid about myself. I was always trying to cover up why I wasn't eating lunch with other girls, why I was making my breakfast last 3 hours, that I didn't look at others. But when I started to recover, I looked at others and truthfully thought, oh, they're not as perfect as I was making my body. Mm-hmm. And, oh, I see faults in them. And now I look and I say, wow, that looks so healthy. And look at those curves and look at that womanly body. And that looks so much better than these straight, rail thin girl that I was trying to be. But at that point, I wasn't looking at anyone else but myself. But I really did think that I was closer to perfect than these other girls were.
It is interesting.
And I had to stop looking at magazines. My mom, when I started to recover, my mom took all the magazines out of the house because I would look at these girls and I would say, oh, how do these models do that?
I hate those magazines. And I honestly, and I'm the mean mom, I have never allowed them in my house. I feel like they have duped one generation of women after another. And it's mm-hmm. not just your generation. I mean, I'm 55 years old, and clearly those things were very present when I was growing up as well. And I grew up in Miami.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I owned a bathing suit. So when you hear the way girls and women talk about their bodies today, what do you think?
I think, thank goodness for the way I feel about my body now. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness for the mental and emotional health that it made me get to, the point that it made me get to. And when I hear, I feel bad, but I know that it's very normal. I can hear when there's a deviation from the normal, when a girl talks and they are to an extreme. But when I do hear girls talk, I think, oh yes, it's normal to not be so satisfied with your body. But I think I want to try in every way that I can to give back to these girls and give them confidence one by one, if there's any way possible. But also I think, you know, thank goodness for myself, thank goodness I'm still here and that I am able to give back to other girls, even if it's just my sister or someone else that's very close to me, and that they can pass it along. It's kind of like one of those one by one, yes, one person does it. That's what I think, because I know that I can't go and change the media. And that's where this is coming from a lot, is my thought.
Well, do tell me how you got better, and we can discuss another time the etiology of all of these
problems.
Yes,
there's so much I can go
it's
into
just
it.
Just too much to talk about today, but tell me how you got better.
I was a very strange case. I actually I was running one day, and I just stopped, which was very strange for me. I was always pushing myself, and I just walked back into my house. I walked home, walked back to my house, and said, Mom, there's something very, very wrong with me. And in the past, that week, my parents had started to notice my eating. It was like all of it came at once. And so my mom had me call a dietitian, and I called, and she was shocked that she was talking to me on the phone. She said, I've never talked to an actual client before that has wanted to bring themselves in.
It's for a teenager,
mm-hmm.
like the mother always calls.
Yes. Yeah. And even when people are a little bit older, they always have someone else kind of like pushing them in. And she was very shocked that I said, you know, there's something really wrong with me and I need to come in. I need to see you. And I sat down in her office and I said everything that I'd been doing.
To the dietitian, not the therapist.
Right. The dietitian first. And she said, you have something called anorexia. And I was shocked. I was completely shocked. But the first thing I said is, you know, in my perfectionist, I said, okay, how do I fix this and make it all better? Like, what do I do? You tell me exactly the steps that I should do, and I'll do them. And I cried. I was in shock. But I had to get the plan they made for me is I got my body weight up first, which is what they do a lot now. And then I started to see a therapist.
Oh, that's interesting.
And worked on my mental, because I had to get my body weight up. That was the most important, the crucial for my health. And
did you fight doing that?
I actually did not. It was very, very painful. In my own body, I fought myself, but I did not fight the dietitian. A lot of people do not want to get better, and they will bring she told me so many stories where they would bring change and put it in their pockets, and when they would weigh in, they would look heavier. They would look like they were gaining weight, but they weren't really. But I never tried to trick her. Because to me, she was the professional and she was going to save me from this monster that had taken over my mind and that I was so afraid of and wanted to get away from. But every bite that I took of food was a fight. Chewing it, I used to chew it 20 times, one bite of food. I was so obnoxious. I would sit at the dinner table for 3 hours while everyone else was gone. My mom would sit with me. Like, it was amazing how she sat with me through everything. And I would chew every bite, and my mind was saying, this is so bad, this is so bad. Like, you hate this, you feel it in your stomach already before I'd even swallowed. You can feel that fat growing. And it was very tough, but I mean, I knew that I could either, what my therapist said to me, or what the dietitian said to me in a very therapist way, is she said, you know, you're in the middle of the ocean, you're on a ship, and it's sinking. And you can either jump off and start swimming, or you can go down with this ship. And she said, I know you can't see the land, but I promise that I will get you to the beach if you do what I say. I will get you to the sand, to the beach. And that's what I followed. That's what I told myself. And it was very, very difficult. I wanted to turn back and go to what I was comfortable with, go back to the eating disorder. But I knew that I would not be happy if I lived that way.
So after you sustained your weight some, did you then start seeing a therapist or a psychiatrist? Did you take some medication?
I started to go to a psychiatrist.
Because you had to change your thinking, too.
Right. And I talked through, they were very surprised how vocal I was. And so they waited a little while to go for me to go to a psychiatrist. But I was talking to my mom a lot. I was telling all these secrets. And she would say, oh, my God, I don't know what to do with these thoughts. I can't believe you did this to your body. There were just so many things that you could never imagine. I used to lay on my stomach because I thought that maybe overnight it would compress. Just every second I was thinking, calculating how I could get rid of weight, how it could be more perfect. It wasn't about the weight. It was about the end goal.
It's about control.
Yes. And there was no end goal. That was and when I said end goal, there actually was never an end. It was just to keep going towards that goal.
So when you went to see the therapist, he helped you to change some of your thinking.
Yes. We talked through it. We went back to the beginning of my childhood. We blamed everything. But it was very good. And we went through every little bit of why I had started and what I had done, and then we got through how I could heal. And that was so good for me because I need to analyze things. And I did start to go on antidepressants, and I was very against that. I thought, you know, I have to power through this on my own. I'm a strong enough person.
I've got to do this perfectly.
Yes. And finally, everyone convinced me, no, the antidepressants are just going to give you what you naturally already have inside you. And so I went on it, and it was a huge change, and it was so helpful because I didn't realize how depressed and upset and sad I was.
And one of the things that I think is so important for people to understand with this disorder, as many other disorders, is that it's not just the emotion, it's the thoughts that go with the emotion, the thinking that you have, the bizarre kind of idea that if you can control your body, your life will be better. That if you can control every ounce of food you put in your mouth, that somehow you'll be more powerful. And that those thoughts are hard to bat out of your head. And the medications really do help you to kind of rearrange that very dangerous thinking.
And it snowballed very quickly. When I was saying I thought it was healthy, and then I went to, oh, I'm an athlete, it snowballed very quickly. And someone has asked me once before to defend how that my rationale of thinking. And all I could say to them was, there was not a rationale. It's not rational. It's not right. But
it's
my
distorted.
Head, yes, in my head, it was completely normal. But I was so brainwashed that I knew I couldn't talk to anybody else. No one else would understand that I kept it to myself, and I got very, very isolated.
So do you still see the therapist? How many years has this been? Has it been 10 years? Or
It has been 7 years since when I began. And the funny thing is, my mom went in, and everyone who cares about me went in and was saying, so when is this going to end? When is the official end date? When will she be recovered? And just as when you care about someone, you ask that. And the therapist would say, you know, she never will 100% be recovered. I can't give you a date. And I still identify myself as an anorexic. I had anorexia, but I will always be an anorexic. I will always be careful of my compulsive thoughts. I will always be careful of everything and make sure it doesn't snowball out of control. I never think I'll go back to that point, but I will always be sensitive.
That you want to be vigilant to not allow that kind of distorted thinking to take your life over again.
Yeah.
And do you still take the medications?
I do. I'm very low on them now, but I do, and I've almost gone off them several times since it's been 7 years. It's been a long time, but every time I almost go off, it's like, you know, I'm very comfortable here, and so why stop it?
Right. Wait till you finish graduate school before you do that.
Yeah, let the stress be over.
Right. Ari, you are so kind to come and share of yourself the way you did. And for those of you who are listening, I want to tell you that this young lady is, she's something. She really is. She is bright, she's poised, and she's just a regular kid. She really is. And I hope that you'll maybe take a look at her book. If there's somebody in your life who needs some help, please, please get it for them. I'm going to have the information on my website starting tonight. I thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters, and I hope that you'll tune in next Thursday at 1 o'clock.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy now. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy.